Intense fighting around the town of Soledar in eastern Ukraine. Russian military advances are being claimed and denied. Why have both sides battled so fiercely over this area? And does it mark a new phase in the war? This is Inside Story. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Fuliba Thibault. Ukraine has refuted Russian claims it's captured the eastern town of Soledar. Whatever the truth, fighting has been intense around what is Europe's largest salt mine. Nearly all of the small town's 11,000 inhabitants have left, and almost everything above ground is destroyed. So why has this battle been so fierce, and does it signal a change in how this war is being fought? We'll be discussing this and more with our guests in just a few minutes. But first, two reports from Ukraine and Russia. Ali Hashem in Moscow explains this battle's connection to a different one within Russia's establishment. Before that, we hear from Charles Stratford, who spent a day with Ukrainian special forces in Bakhmut, close to Soledar.
Ukrainian defensive positions west of the frontline city of Bakhmut. Russian infantry are slowly advancing into northern and eastern residential areas over the hill. The center of town is almost completely destroyed. The streets are virtually deserted. The blasts of exploding artillery and rockets is almost constant. A soldier with the Ukrainian Special Forces leads us to their bunker. Warm, dark tunnels lined with weapons and ammunition boxes. Drones feed real-time video of Russian infantry movement only a kilometer and a half away.
They have a lot of manpower, so they send every time their troops like waves. So we cannot stop every time because we have less guys. And unfortunately, we also lost a lot of guys at this moment.
Men rest before their next mission, often close combat, where trenches are only 20 meters apart. Commanders insist we hide their identities and don't film landmarks nearby that could give their positions away.
They split into small groups in order to avoid our artillery, and they infiltrate through residential areas and tree lines, but they also suffer huge casualties. Military intelligence from our Western partners is often not distributed to us quickly enough on the front lines, where we need it to target command centers, logistics hubs, and weapons depots.
The shelling is getting closer. There's been an intensification of shelling in the last few minutes. The soldiers here are telling us that up to 600 Russian soldiers are moving into new positions in the northeast of the city. We climb the stairs of a destroyed residential building. Smoke rises from fresh strikes a few streets away, close to Russian-held sections of town. What remains of the lives of people who fled the fighting lies abandoned in a destroyed home. Russian forces are gradually surrounding Bakhmut, from Soledar, around 15 kilometers to the north, to villages in the southeast, strangling what little remains of life here as the Ukrainian army prepare new lines of defense. Charles Stratford, Al Jazeera, Bakhmut.
It's a moment Moscow has been waiting for.
The capture of Soledar became possible thanks to the continuous strikes on the positions of the armed forces of Ukraine by Russian Air Force missiles and artillery.
Moscow hopes Soledar will be a stepping stone to another strategic Ukrainian city, Bakhmut.
I think that only after the liberation of Bakhmut will an offensive operation be prepared to help complete the liberation of Donetsk from Ukraine. Soledar opens the way for Russian military units to Kramatorsk. This is the largest city of the Donetsk People's Republic, still held by Ukrainian nationalists.
But there's another battle going on. This one inside the Russian establishment over the role mercenaries from the Wagner Group played in capturing Soledar.
The group posted on its Telegram channel a statement in the form of an answer to a question. accusing some officials of trying to steal its victory, while stressing that the only fighters present in the battle for Soledad were Wagner fighters.
The Ministry of Defense later issued a statement confirming that Wagner's role was essential in the battle for Soledad.
Wagner is not registered in Russia. We do not have a law on private military companies. Therefore, apparently the military is trying not to mention Wagner as part of the group that performs the tasks of the special military operation. Of course, this is very insulting to the Wagner fighters, and the case is also about the jealousy of some generals.
And as Russia attempts to capture more cities, the echoes of the battle in Moscow for the heart and mind of Vladimir Putin may be heard and the battlefields in Ukraine. Ali Hashem, Al Jazeera, Moscow.
Well, let's bring in our guest now for today's show from Odessa in Ukraine, Michael Borserkiu. He is a senior fellow at the Atlantic Council. From Moscow, Sergei Markov, who's the director of the Institute of Political Studies and a former spokesman for President Vladimir Putin. And from Bath, Patrick Bury, a senior defense and security lecturer at the University of Bath and a former British Army officer and former NATO analyst. Thank you, gentlemen, for being with us on Inside Story. Welcome. Michael, let me start with you in Odessa, if I can. The Ukrainian government disputes the claim that the Russians are in control of Soledar. How big of a setback would it be for Ukraine if the Russians indeed were in control of this salt town?
Right. Well, first of all, the Russians are making this much more of a bigger deal than it is. The status of Soledar is still very, very much up in the air. How do we know that? From correspondents who are there on the front line and from Ukrainian servicemen who have given comments to foreign media. I think from the Russian side, Soledar has much more informational or propaganda value than actual strategic value. After humiliating losses on the battlefield, including losing Kherson, they need some type of win, no matter how small, to be able to feed to the Russian public, and especially to those war hawks, to those Russian bloggers who are giving actually the Kremlin a tough time. Now, the Ukrainian side, it should be said that, you know, they don't look at this war as a human meat grinder like the Russians do. When there are threats to their men and women, they do pull back a bit, and they've made that clear because human life, unlike on the Russian side, they say is to be valued. One last thing, if I may, on this is that it is a very, very long front line. Mm. It tends to move perhaps 50 or a few hundred meters one way or the other day by day. So there's a long way to go before anyone can claim having taken over Soledar.
All right, let's ask Sergei in Moscow why Soledar is such a big deal for Russia. Why has so much manpower, including mercenaries, Sergei, been brought onto this area?
Soledar is not important for Russia. First of all, we should understand. Russian government is saying the truth. Kyiv repressive regime is lying almost all the time. And Soledar, not important from a military point of view.
If it's not important from a military point of view, why are they sending so many troops into Soledar, including mercenaries from the Wagner group?
Oh, mercenaries from Wagner group, they're fighting in the different regions, in Donbas region and in other regions. Soledar is very important politically, first mm-hmm. of all, for Vladimir Zelensky. Because real military capacity of Ukrainian army is created not by Ukraine, but by help of Western countries. But Western countries want to give help to the successful Ukrainian army. That's why it's very important politically for Vladimir Putin to show that Ukrainian army is still going forward. And losing of city after big battle, it's a big failure, political failure of Vladimir Zelensky in the face of his Western partners. That's why Zelensky sent dozens of thousands of Ukrainian soldiers to fight for the such small cities as Soledar and Bakhmut, and ready to lower thousands of Ukrainian soldiers to die for these small cities, which politically means almost military, from military point of view means almost nothing, but politically It's very important for Zelensky.
Okay.
Because it's important for Zelensky, it's becoming important for those who want to crush Zelensky, for Russia.
Let's bring in Patrick Beery in Bath for your thoughts on this, about the significance of Solidar and Bakhmut. Some say Solidar, as Sergei was saying there, is of no significance militarily to Russia. It's more related to Russian domestic politics. What are your thoughts on this battle and how it's unfolding?
Yeah, I'd agree with Sergei, and actually Michael is saying the same thing too. Look, the key thing is here, look at the noises coming out of the Kremlin and the videos being trying to flood the internet from the Wagner group. There's obviously serious discord amongst there. We know some about the power struggles between Gerasimov, the general in charge now of the whole operation, Prigozhin, Sorovikin. And it seems to be that essentially this is about, they're not fighting a battle in the way that you would over a strategic objective. This is about sending Russian troops into a meat grinder to be killed to meet some sort of political infighting about the conduct of the war and who should be the head honcho on the ground. So that's my reading of it, essentially. I think, look, Once both sides start to take a serious amount of casualties, insignificant objectives can become more significant because there's a blood, there's basically a blood treasure which has been spent, and it becomes more significant. But I still think that this Solidar really doesn't matter significantly. Even if you zoom the map out over Bakhmut, it doesn't matter massively. Mm. And I don't agree with the idea that this is a big issue for Zelensky in terms of NATO support. NATO, as we know, is a defensive organization. If Ukraine would start to lose city after city, then NATO would actually up its support, I'd imagine. So I don't think really it has an optical or a heavy way on NATO allies. And it's also interesting to note that the UK has just said it's going to send Challenger 2 tanks to Ukraine. So watch this space.
Indeed. Let's allow Sergei to respond to that. Sergei, Patrick says, you know, Russia is fighting for politics here, for political infighting, rather than a strategic, clear plan when it comes to Solidar and Bakhmut. What is your response to that?
For domestic politics, it's absolutely no needless to think to take Solidar, because Vladimir Putin popularity very high, and also military power of Russia fully depend on Russian capacities, Russian society and Russian economy. So for Russian domestic politics, it's not so important. Of course, Russian society want very much Russian army to go forward and to liberate more and more Ukraine cities, not only Donetsk and Lugansk, but also Kharkov, Odessa and other. Russian representative of the United Nations say very clearly last night about Russian demands. Russia demands that there should be no threat to Russian security from Ukrainian territory, and also that all Russian-speaking people should have political and social rights in the Ukrainian territory as well. If it will be by peace, by negotiation, Russia will be happy to do it. But if Western country will continue to insist that Russian-speaking people should be second kind of the citizens with no right to speak a native language, Russia will get their goals by force.
All right. Let's bring in Michael in Ukraine to respond to that. We heard there from Sergei Russia's end games, in his view, when it comes to this war in Ukraine. Ukraine's end game in this conflict is the restoration of its territory to pre-2014 borders. I want to know, Michael, whether, you know, the Russians are becoming a more formidable force right now for the Ukrainians on the ground in close quarter fighting with more, you know, as we've heard, Wagner group mercenaries involved in the conflict. How difficult is it for Ukraine to defend its positions right now?
Yeah, well, first of all, what's coming out of Sergei's mouth is complete nonsense. If indeed the Russians cared one iota about the security, the protection of Russian speakers here in Ukraine, why are Russian-speaking cities being bombed, like Kharkiv, for example, like other cities in eastern Ukraine? I hear from Ukrainians who are Russian speakers who come from that region, they can understand the Russian mentality on this. But you know, when we think about it, the Russians have put very low value on life. So that's why that's happening. And in terms of the Russian fighting strategy you referred to, well, right now, as I sit here, Ukraine is under a nationwide missile attack right now from the Russian side. That's the only way they know how to fight, is not eye-to-eye combat with their opponent, but with these long-range missiles that are very destructive. So trying to weaponize winter, trying to damage Ukrainian infrastructure. I think what we're going to see going forward over the next days and weeks is quite the pivot, probably, from the Ukrainian side on the front line. And a big reason for that, fully, will be because of the, it'll take some time, but the addition of these tanks, like the Challenger 2, post-Cold War, fourth-generation tank, and also the other fighting vehicles provided by Europe. Also, the added training, things like that. But one more thing quickly is, I think between now and the one-year anniversary in the middle of February, Russia will try to launch quite a massive assault if we know their mentality well enough.
Okay, let's allow Sergei to respond to that. Sergei, we had heard Michael say there that the Russians have a low value on life. They're using mercenaries made up of former convicts, and they don't really care about losing these men on the battlefield. What do you respond to that?
You just lie. I think what we have now from military, defense ministers of both countries, of course, we cannot trust this information during the war. But according to my evaluation, my understanding, for Russian army, citizens of Ukraine, it's our people. We, Vladimir Putin, many times told that we are one the people. It's some kind of civic war inside Russian people. You may know that 70%
said, if Russia considers these people, its people, why is it bombing cities that are occupied by its so-called people?
He's lying. He's lying. Russia never targeting civilian neighborhoods in such city like Kharkov and Kyiv. It's just 100% neo-Nazi propaganda.
Okay,
it was a lot of casualties in Mariupol.
Patrick, Mariupol, I'll bring you in on
Ukrainian
this.
Ukrainian army.
Where's the Russian bombing concentrated?
That's all, that's alternative reality we're talking about here. So I don't know how we can continue a debate with someone with an alternative reality, you know? To come back to Sergei's first point, as he well knows, just because you're a Russian speaker doesn't mean you make you any less Ukrainian, according to the referendum and all the polling that was conducted. You can be a Russian speaker and now it's heavily diminishing, as you'd imagine, and also feel pro-Ukrainian. So, of course, there's some small segments of the population that still do feel Russian, but it is smaller than it was. So I don't think that argument holds. If you're going to say that the Russians haven't bombarded Kyiv and Kharkiv, I can't have a debate with someone about that. It's clear to everybody.
Okay. Let me ask you, Patrick, about the recent military shakeup we've seen in Russia. And how do you think it's going to change the conflict, this military shakeup we've seen within the Russian army? And does General Gerasimov's appointment, do you think, herald a new phase in the conflict?
There's a few ways of looking at it, and it's again, it's about internal dynamics. Is it that he has been put in there because you broke it? You know, you just destroyed our conventional army with a half-brained plan for taking a massive country, and now you fix it, yeah? Or was Sorovikin becoming too powerful with a direct line to Putin, and therefore they moved in to get rid of him? I agree with Michael. I think we can expect to see 100,000 partly trained, recently mobilized Russian troops being, pushed into an attack somewhere. And we'll have to see. Hopefully the Ukrainians can repel that. I wouldn't be surprised if they have to give ground in places. Okay. But really, this is about the summer volley. These tanks, which hopefully come in line, the British announcement is all about pushing the Germans. The Germans need to get their finger out. They're the ones with the Leopard 2 tanks. There's lots of them in Europe. The Challenger 2, different logistics change. They're in the UK. It's a gesture. It's an important gesture, but
right.
We need the
Leopard
2s.
An important
2s.
Gesture, you say, Patrick. What's the end game for the West in arming Ukraine with more offensive weapons? We've heard the UK announcing the tanks today, France as well. What is the end game of the West here?
So I was just coming on to this. So I think the tanks and the armoured infantry fighting vehicles are about creating an armoured brigade for Ukraine that can be used come the summer in counteroffensives. I'd expect 2 Ukrainian counteroffensives this summer is what I'm thinking. Who knows how successful they'll be. The Russians have had a long time to prepare defensive lines. And there's a few things about modern warfare we are waiting to find out, such as how the precision-guided munitions work against trenches and defences in depth, which is different from what we've seen them so far. So, it remains to be seen, but we've definitely got another summer of fighting coming at least.
All right. Sergei Markov in Moscow, we are nearing the one-year anniversary of this Russian invasion. What are Russians' plans for Soledar and beyond after it's consolidated its control of this area?
Russian plans still the same. Russia doesn't need new territory. You may know from geography that Russia is the biggest country in the world in terms of territories and kilometers. What Russia needs is, first of all, to liberate people in Ukraine. Those Ukrainian political leaders who believe that Ukraine and Russia should be in friendship and in one economic union should be liberated from Ukrainian prison and should be allowed to have free political campaigning for getting political faction and majority in the Ukrainian parliament. It means that Ukraine should be democratized and Ukraine should be neutral. It's what Russian army is fighting for. That's why it's very much supported. From military point of view, I predict, I agree with my colleagues that it's most of the analysts expected that Russian army will try attempt to go forward in the end of the winter, and Ukrainian army is preparing by Western masters to be ready for the attacking against Russian army in the middle of spring. Now it's mass mobilization in Ukrainian in Ukraine, and also sending a lot of offensive weaponry to the Ukrainian army. So okay, we will see the result. We believe that we will win because from our side is true.
Okay. Michael, in Ukraine, there's been a substantive change in the type of weaponry the U.S. and its allies are providing Ukraine. How will this help, mm-hmm. and how do you see the conflict evolving in the next few months as we near the one-year anniversary of the Russian invasion?
Sure. I'll answer that, but just quickly to Sergei's point, it may be geographically a big country in the world, but why is it that they have to forcibly deport hundreds of thousands of Ukrainian children and women and men to Russia? Why is it that they have to set lines of Russian troops behind those convicts fighting for a Wagner Group and others to shoot them if they start running back from the Ukrainian front lines? That would be a good question for him to answer. But I think in terms of what we're going to see going forward is there's a very big difference now in terms of Western support for Ukraine's efforts. I think the leaders in Western capitals have grown the spine to send these main battlefield tanks and very heavy-duty fighting vehicles. But also there's a realization fully that this is no longer a war limited to Ukraine. Russian missiles have violated Moldovan airspace not far from here, by the way, many times. Missile fragments have fallen into Poland, plus the knock-on effect of the migration of the weaponization of food, weaponization of energy. So to kind of my main point here is that there's a realization in these Western capitals that if Mr. Putin and his forces are not pushed back now for good, that Russia will attempt grabs on Ukraine again and surrounding territory and affect other NATO countries as well. So they should have done it earlier. There were a lot of warnings, but finally, I think the tide has turned. And I don't think, given the rotten, the deep rotten corruption on the Russian side, they're having to mobilize convicts, homeless people, that they have much chance against what is awaiting them right now.
Okay, gentlemen, we will leave it there. Unfortunately, we are running out of time. Thank you so very much for a very interesting discussion. Michael Bursercu, Sergei Markov, and Patrick Berry, thank you very much for joining us. And thank you, too, for watching. You can always watch this program again anytime by visiting our website at aljazeera.com. For further discussion, go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. And, of course, you can join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle is at AJ Inside Story. From me, Fully Bat Thibault, and the whole team here in Doha, thanks for watching. Bye for now.